Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Good Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're having a great day. LZ, yay! I'm excited. You say you have breaking news?
Yes. I have more breaking news.
Oh, wow. Keep it coming.
This just happened. And I'm so excited. I could barely contain myself. I'm standing right now. I thought it was because of the coffee, but no, it's because of this breaking news. Chuck D of Public Enemy has now started following me on Twitter. Chuck D believes I am fighting the power. Chuck D believes I'm fighting the power, baby.
That's great.
You need to understand, Travis. You need to understand. I had Public Enemy posters all over my dorm room in college. I used to talk in their lyrics all the time. And now, as a grown-ass man, Chuck D finally sees me. Chuck sees me, baby. I'm fighting the power. 911 is a joke. You can't trust it.
You know what? You got me a little excited for it. And he's not even following me. So congratulations.
He follows me, Travis.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, Travis, yeah. What's the problem?
Travis? I don't know.
Why is Chuck following
you, Travis?
Maybe he hasn't listened to the show the last couple of weeks. Maybe he's making assumptions. I have no idea.
Maybe it was that General Lee pick. Maybe he was listening that one day.
Let's keep it moving. Let's talk about Major League Baseball cannot getting their act together. Let's leave the General Lee in the rearview mirror, please. By 20% in yesterday's snake draft is probably not going to be enough to put me over the top, considering there's only two of us. That's good news. Congratulations, LZ. I'm glad that Chuck D is following you. Reggie Bush has been disassociated with the University of Southern California for the last 10 years. And what disassociation means is they just pretend he doesn't exist. They just pretend that he never existed. They just pretend that he didn't win a Heisman Trophy for SC. They just pretend that he didn't win a national championship for SC, that he didn't play in one of the greatest college football games in history for SC, that he didn't sell a bunch of number five jerseys for USC, that he didn't put 80,000-plus people in the Coliseum for USC. They basically just said, okay, yeah, you want him gone? All right, we'll pretend he didn't have it. Now they're saying he can come back. The problem with this is they're not the ones saying it. What happened is the penalty expired. There's a new rule that was adopted in 2017 that said any mandated disassociation between an individual and a school lasts 10 years. LZ, take a wild guess on when the disassociation between SC and Reggie Bush started. Today, just as a jumping off point, today is June 10th, 2020. You want to take a guess when it started?
Boy, this is so hard. How long is the penalty for?
10 years.
Oh, 10 years. Oh, God. I don't know. Did it just start last year?
Nope.
Two?
June 10th.
Three, four, five,
2010. So 10 years to the day.
So, Travis.
And just as a random occurrence, just as a happenstance, exactly 10 years have ticked off the clock, and SC said, Reggie, welcome back. It's been too long.
Come on in, Travis.
We love you, Reggie. You know what? This whole NCAA disassociation thing, what a crock. We're good. It's 10 years. It's good. The clock's midnight. Yep. Oh, yeah, Reggie, come on back in. We love you, Reggie. It's awful. Reggie Bush broke some silly rules that really aren't even in place anymore. SC got penalized scholarships, postseason bowl appearances. Reggie Bush got erased from history, despite the fact that we all remember it. No credit for letting the clock run out and then saying, hey, we loved you all along. No credit to you.
It's so embarrassing. It's so embarrassing for SC to wait until the date to actually let this information come out and be reported like this. It's so, so embarrassing. Listen, Reggie Bush impact on this program has been so positive, you're still spending the cash he made for you 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Like, that's how important of a figure he has been for his program. And to sit here and to make him wait for some arbitrary date put together by an organization that's no longer protecting amateurism, if it ever was, if you really want to talk about that, as much as it wanted to control certain athletes in certain sports. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get all political because I think we've had enough politics, but you know what I'm talking about. Control. You know, oh, this makes money. Let's get control. It is so freaking embarrassing. Reggie Bush played that season. Reggie Bush earned the Heisman that season. Reggie Bush should not be vilified like he did something to the NCAA. The NCAA should be vilified because it did something to Reggie Bush. If anyone should be offering any more apologies at this point, it should be the men and women who did not fight for that young man. The men and women who sat there and said, well, we're going to do what this group of people say, but we're still going to reap all the benefits of his sacrifice. It's embarrassing and disappointing, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah,
it's disappointing because if you're supposed to be a student athlete, Travis, what did you learn from this experience as a student athlete?
Cover your tracks.
Because if I'm Reggie Bush, I'm thinking either that or you're on your own.
Yeah.
That they talk about family and they talk about, you know, advocates for students. But at the end of the day, you're on your own. That's why I got out of
it. Yeah. Well, and let's be just as transparent as what Reggie Bush did, took some money, took a house, took some money to furnish the house for his parents. That if I had to guess, is fairly standard in the world of high level college football. That if you want to stick your head in the sand and pretend that that's not taking place at every top program in the country, then I'm not going to change your mind. But you're being naive if you think that what he did was out of line with what was probably going on in a lot of other places. So if you can live with that hypocrisy, fine, whatever. I'm not going to try to change your mind. Here's for people of a certain age and I'm a USC football fan. I grew up around it, going to games. My grandparents are USC alums and have been part of the program for forever and ever and ever. And so I know USC football pretty well. That being said, because I am the age that I am, when I think of USC football, those are the teams that I think about. Those are the teams, the Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart, Lendell White teams, the Pete Carroll teams. Those are the ones that I think about. I know about O.J. Simpson. I know that he was a great college football player. I remember kind of vaguely that Charles White was a great running back at USC and won the Heisman Trophy. I remember Marcus Allen. I remember some of these guys. But the Carson Palmer to Matt Leinart to Reggie Bush to those Heisman Trophy winners, that era where they got it cranked up all over again, that's what I remember. And of all those guys that I just mentioned, the guy that is probably most memorable of all of them is Reggie Bush. And that's got to be true for a lot of people that grew up here in LA or the USC football fans that watched all of these, that watched all of these games for years and years and years. For the school that had him, for the school that reaped all the benefits of having him play football for their school, for them to just go along with all of this. Look, I get it. They can't push back on the bowl game penalties. If the NCAA says you're ineligible, you're ineligible. If they say we're taking scholarships, then they're taking scholarships. And I guess there's nothing you can do. But you could have pushed back on this. You could have pushed back on this idea that, oh, we're going to pretend it never happened. Because what are you about? Are you about just following what the NCAA tells you to do with your tail between your legs and we'll do whatever you say because we fought you and you penalized us, so we're just going to go away? Or are you about the Trojan family that you talk about all the time? Because of the family that I remember, Reggie was at the front of the class. Reggie was the guy that was doing all those crazy things along with Leinart and White and Palmer and all of these guys. You're just going to turn your back on him? And then when the clock expires, it's like, hey, Reggie, come on back in. If I were Reggie, I would be torn up by this. I would be torn up by the decision of, do I just run back into these people who had such an easy time turning their back on me because I miss it and I love it and I want to be a part of it and it means something to me? Or do I hold a grudge for the rest of my life because they screwed me? I mean, those are two impossible decisions.
They are two impossible decisions. And it's unfair that once again, he's put in some sort of prism in which he now has to decide which one of these two routes he's to go. You know, does he swallow his pride and come back and enjoy the benefits of being welcomed back into the Trojan family? Or does he dig in his heels and say, you know what, screw you because you screwed me first? And as I said, he didn't take performance enhancement drugs. He didn't cheat on his exams. He didn't get someone to take his GRE or his SAT or ACT. He took care of his family. I mean, that's the crime that he's being accused of. That's the crime that he's being held accountable for at such a ridiculous level that it's on par with people who committed actual federal crimes.
Mm-hmm.
He took care of his family. It's embarrassing.
Something that would not be a crime under these new rules, that Reggie Bush would be allowed to go make money on his name and likeness under the new rules that started here in California. A number of other states quickly got on board. The NCAA really had no choice. But for 10 years, he had to pay a penalty for something that you finally saw the light on. Great. Great. If I were Reggie, I would be mad for the rest of my life. I'm going to games because I want the back slaps. I want to say, oh, I remember wins. I'm sure that feels wonderful, but I'd never forget. I'd never forget that when it got tough, they made the decision that they made. All right. Dr. Harry Edwards is going to join us next. We'll talk about Colin Kaepernick and if there is a path for him to return to the NFL. That's coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right. As promised, right now we are joined by Dr. Harry Edwards, who is a sociologist and a professor emeritus of sociology at Cal Berkeley. Dr. Edwards, thanks for coming back on the show. Appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. No problem. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Edwards, there's been a lot of traction happening in the sports world in regards to, you know, criminal justice reform, advocating for Colin Kaepernick. But I've been really intrigued by this recent development from the Players Coalition, in which more than 1,400 current and retired athletes, coaches, GMs, etc., have advocated for the ending of immunity for police officers. Some of the names are Tom Brady, Drew Brees. Those caliber of athletes have signed this letter from the Players Coalition. So my question to you is, after so many times of looking like we had false starts in terms of addressing racism and police brutality, does it feel as if the sports world is firmly behind this now, that something's actually going to get done with them being part of it?
I'm hopeful, but I'm not terribly optimistic. I've seen these kinds of mobilizations over the last half century, and they tend to go very, very well as long as the advocacy is to address the pain in the black community or in the communities of people of color. But when it comes down to addressing the problem, which is in the white community, which means dismantling not just racist structures, but racist attitudes of supremacy and privilege and power, that is when things begin to disintegrate. So it's great to go online and sign petitions. Gil Scott Heron said in the 1960s, the revolution will not be televised. And what he meant was that people had misconstrued the pictures of all of the marches and the sit-ins, the march on Washington, the march on the Pettus Bridge and so forth in Selma, Alabama, as the change that was being demanded. That was simply highlighting the pain in the African-American community. Today, people oftentimes misconstrue numbers and Twitters and Instagrams and emails and petitions online and so forth as the change that we are demanding. But just as the revolution was not televised in the 1960s, the revolution will not be online in the year 2020 and going forward. It's going to happen in the boardrooms, across the kitchen table, in the homes, in the schools, in the curriculums, demythologizing the history of America and facing the truth of what has happened and why it's happened and how it is reflected and reiterated today in everyday activities and attitudes and dispositions in white society. The problem, part of the problem, of course, is the police. They talk about prosecutor being able to indict a ham sandwich. A police can stop, detain, and arrest anybody for almost anything. That is backed up by a whole institutional structure in the white community, which not only gives them that latitude, but when the train leaves the track and they kill somebody, in most instances, they are not even charged, much less prosecuted. So all of that has to be dismantled. And what I'm looking to see is, are we going to go through what we went through in the 1960s, where as long as we were in the South and talking about desegregation down there, it was fine, and they were identifying with the pain of the black community. But when it came to dismantling the problems, and Dr. King moved north to Chicago and Detroit and St. Louis and places like that, where he said he ran into the most vociferous, violent, racist attitudes that he had encountered, even in Mississippi compared to Mississippi and Alabama, the movement shut down. They turned on Dr. King. They turned on the movement because they were not willing to do the hard work of change in the communities where the problem was, as opposed to identifying and empathizing with black people and the pain that we have been suffering all these generations. So it's, you cannot alleviate the pain unless you deal with the problem. And there's been a hard line of resistance, recalcitrance, entrenched attitudes, dispositions toward protecting those privileges, that attitude of supremacy, and that power that sustains the pain and so forth that we are living with in the black community. So I'm of course elated that you could get all these athletes to sign a petition online and say that we are for justice for black people in their communities and so forth and so on. I'm elated at that, but the change that we demand, the revolution, will not be online. You will not be able to sign up for it online.
Dr. Harry Edwards joining us here on the morning show on the Sprint People's Hotline. Dr. Edwards, what did you make of Roger Goodell's statement late last week, specifically the omission of Colin Kaepernick's name and him apologizing for getting it wrong the first time? And do you believe that it opens up an opportunity for Colin Kaepernick to return to the NFL?
Well, first of all, I know Roger. We talk from time to time. I email him more than he probably wants me to. that was like to say that we were wrong in terms of our dispositions and attitudes toward the protesting athletes. That was like telling me my nose has two holes in it. I already knew that. That's not a step forward. That's admitting that you're standing where everybody knew you were standing. The fact that Colin Kaepernick's name was not mentioned again goes to the hard work of real change. He should have said in a very short statement, we were wrong, that protesting athletes were right. We're going to make sure that all of the athletes who protested are made whole in terms of their opportunities and so forth in this league, and that includes Colin Kaepernick, who I intend to have a personal conversation with and make sure that he knows that this league is going to do everything that we can to make sure that he gets an opportunity to play in the National Football League if he wants it, even if and there are some places that would be ideal, such as Minnesota, L.A., San Francisco, there, Seattle. There are places that would be ideal given the broad response to the movement against injustice. So that is what we're going to do. End of statement. I was not particularly encouraged that the players who came on and did that short PSA never mentioned Kaepernick's name. I'm hoping that the commissioner and the league will get this right, because Colin Kaepernick is hanging over the league like a death shroud. They need to get that garbage off the road. The other thing is that there's a growing disposition toward Nobel Peace Prize nomination for Colin Kaepernick and George Floyd jointly, because of the movement that their activities have precipitated and provoked, the awareness that they have generated, not just in this country, but around the world. And so the last thing in the world the NFL needs is for a someone who has been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize to be outside looking in while they are refusing to even mention his name. I think that the NFL is better than that. I know that Roger is better than that, and they need to get this stuff off the road so that they can move forward. They have their hands full with the pandemic and trying to get games started at all. They don't need this additional political contradiction hanging over them like a lightning storm.
Dr. Edwards, just shifting gears a little bit, Reggie Bush, the ban, the 10-year ban on him from USC has expired, essentially. It wasn't lifted, it was expired. And now Reggie Bush is left with a choice to either come back to campus and say all is forgiven or dig his heels in and say, you know what, you turned your back on me, I'm turning my back on you. If you were advising Reggie Bush, what would you suggest he did in this moment?
Well, I would suggest that he do the same thing that other great people have done. There are some examples out there. You not only call people out, you call them in to join you. You not only stand outside and point to a malevolent situation, you let them know that you're willing to come inside and work with them to be better going forward. I mean, there's the example of Nelson Mandela. He had a picture of Tommy Smith and John Carlos on the podium in Mexico City, along with a poster that we had developed in support of the anti-apartheid movement in sports in South Africa, smuggled into his jail cell. And one of the statements that he made was, I learned from the Olympic Project for Human Rights that sports could be leveraged to make social change. And so when he got out of prison, everybody was saying, disband the Springbok rugby team, disband all of these apartheid-era sports teams and so forth that kept blacks and Cape Coloreds and others out of the sport, the mainstream sports institution. He said, oh, no, 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 I'm not going to disband the Springboks. I'm going to expand the Springboks, because that is going to be the model that we're going to use in terms of changing society. We can change people's dispositions, as old Edward said, by changing their perceptions and understandings of the games they play. But we've got to engage people. We can't just call them out. We've got to call them in. We just can't stand outside and point at the contradictions and malevolency of their activities. We've got to be willing to go in and talk to them and work with them to make things better. And so I would advise Reggie, okay, look, we know what happened. You know what happened. Everybody walked away whole except you. And now to be big enough, to be visionary enough, to be capable enough and secure enough to go in to USC and say, welcome back, my brothers and sisters. I'm glad that you've come over to my side, because that's essentially would be the definition of what is going on here. Even though his ban simply expired, the reality is he's big enough to step up and say, welcome back. And that puts him in command of that situation.
Dr. Harry Edwards, professor of sociology emeritus at Cal Berkeley, joining us here on The Morning Show. Dr. Edwards, as always, it was a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Ilse, there's a whole bunch in there that I want to come back and get into, in particular the part about them needing to get that off of the road so they can move forward. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
LZ, I really liked how Dr. Edwards answered the question about Colin Kaepernick and the idea of whether or not this is going to be an opportunity for him to return to the league. And he said, you know, I know Roger Goodell, we've talked about this. The terminology that he used, the phrase that he used, that they need to get this off the road, I think is perfect. Because, and I want to make sure that I don't trivialize this, because it's not trivial in any way, but they need to address him by name, by directly, assuming that they can, and give him an opportunity to rejoin this league and let it happen or not happen based on his ability to play. And I think we can all assume that he can play, so he would stick. But it's over. Even if he doesn't, even if he comes in and tries and they decide, you know what, we're going to go in a different direction, at least that point, it's off the road. Not that we forget about Colin Kaepernick, not that we never speak his name again, but at least that particular, yeah, but what about Cap? What about Colin Kaepernick? Why can't you say his name? Why hasn't he been on a team? We're done with that portion of this discussion, at least for a while.
You know, I really don't understand why it's so hard to see that, Travis. That's like, that literally is like PR 101. First step, try to ignore it. If it doesn't dissipate, if you can't ignore it, then two, take control of the narrative. Take control of the story. So that if the story is going to be told, it's told the way that you want it to be told. They didn't do that either. And now they're perpetually trying to play catch up to a story that had they just addressed at the beginning properly, would have been gone years ago. Either Colin Kaepernick today would be on someone's roster and no one's really talking much about him per se, unless it's moments like this, or you pretend as if he doesn't exist and be a thorn in your PR side for the next 4 to 5 years, which is what happened. And now all of a sudden, you've gone from being a league that could have taken control by simply treating him fairly and allowing him to go on, and the story would have died years ago. Instead, you're gearing up for another PR fight because you know what's going to happen once players start protesting again and you haven't said Colin Kaepernick's name.
Well,
or if he's not on a roster.
This is what I don't understand, because let's make a comparison here between the NFL and NASCAR. I'm not suggesting that the NFL doesn't have fans that are racist. They obviously do. The reaction to Colin Kaepernick the first time demonstrates as much. But if the NFL went to the next step, which you just described, short of saying, hey, we apologize for getting it wrong, we're going to listen, and then the next step is, we're bringing Colin Kaepernick in. We're allowing protests. We're going to move forward on this issue. There clearly would be football fans that would be upset by that, offended by that, and maybe even some that would say, you know what, I'm done with your league. That said, the NFL would continue to exist and thrive. The NFL would continue to be the most popular sport in this country, even if all of the racist fans decided, well, Kaepernick's back, I'm out. NASCAR, when we talked about this a little bit yesterday, Bubba Wallace said he wants all of the Confederate flags out of the sport. That if you, and you've been to races, I've been to races, you don't have to work real hard to find them. They're everywhere. Okay? They are everywhere. Yes. And he wants them removed. NASCAR really hasn't said anything about it. Some other drivers have been in that middle ground that we've talked before. Martin Truex, quote, I think NASCAR is going to do the right thing there, and I stand with what they come up with. Okay, Denny Hamlin, I'm supportive of whatever they want to change. Joey Logano, I'm not someone that's waved a Confederate flag in the past in any way. I'm someone that waves the American flag. They've got a different decision, because if they decided that they're going to take the next step, the one that Bubba Wallace is suggesting, I don't know if their sport does survive. I don't know if they can do that. The NFL has a very easy path. Let's do the right thing. We've already said we want to do the right thing. Let's actually do it. And whatever happens, happens. We'll keep moving. The NFL is the NFL. NASCAR, if they alienate their fan base that is passionate about the Confederate flag, I don't know if there's a business there. It's a totally different decision for them. It's an easy decision for the NFL. And morally, it's an easy decision for NASCAR, but economically, not nearly as easy.
I'm going to put this out here hyperbole, and I'm not trying to be sensationalized or give you a hot take, sake of clicks. What Bubba Wallace said in the arena in which he is saying it puts him on par with some of the bravest athletes we've ever seen. And this is why. To your point, Travis, there's enough non-racism happening in the NFL to lead you to believe that while it might be true that there could be some economic damage being done by what Colin Kaepernick had decided to do, the reality is that we also know he has a safe space. And we know that because his jersey continued to sell even though he wasn't playing the game. So that was a safe space for him. We know that it's somewhat safe for LeBron James and other NBA players to say something because of the relationship with the fan base and also with the league. Bubba Wallace is on an island, bruh. Mm-hmm. He's on an island. When he won his championship, he was the first black driver since Wendell Scott in 1963 to win a NASCAR event. 1963. If he comes out and says, I want to see Confederate flags removed, he doesn't say this under the comfort of knowing that there's a good chunk of people who sees the world as he does. No, he's saying that in the lion's den, basically saying, hello, lions, I'm a dentist and I'd like to remove all of your teeth. Hmm. That's what he is doing. And if they decide, if NASCAR decide, you know what, we can't mess with this guy, he's bad for business, he doesn't have the luxury of knowing he's got enough of the fan base to put a stink about it. His jersey's not still going to be selling if they kick them out. What he's doing is literally, literally putting his entire future on the line, because it's so easy to see them not only saying to hell with you, but really saying to hell with you, and there's no one that's going to come and advocate for you. And even if we were to organize, even if other athletes were to organize and start to bang the drums a little bit and saying, this isn't fair what you're doing to Brother Wallace, the fact of the matter is, it's NASCAR. We ain't loving you like that anyway. So you're going to have to ask us to come in your defense and fight for you on your behalf and fight with you on your side for something you don't even care about. So I applaud the brother for stepping out there like that. But at the end of the day, you know, and I know, and Raj, you know, and Jorge, you know, and everyone that's listening knows that NASCAR has an image of being full of racists. And having that Confederate flag is a big part of that. And the reality is that the CEO is going to have a choice between standing with the people who says Black Lives Matter and standing with the people wearing those damn flags, because they're the one that's not just helping the business, they are the business. And I don't feel good for the NASCAR CEO, because you have the choice between being the CEO of a sport or being the CEO of racism. And that is a real hard place to be in. But that's where he's at, and proud of Bubba Wallace for stepping out there like that in that environment to say the things that he said. You know that brother's driving a car that says Black Lives Matter in the next race? Paint it all black and says Black Lives Matter?
Yep.
Come on now. That's some brave, brave, brave
look at
display of what you believe in.
Look at the response from some of these drivers that I read you before. There wasn't one of these responses that was, yeah, of course we should get rid of it. It's way overdue. Yes, it should go. It was whatever NASCAR is deciding, I'll roll with that. I mean, this is not, like you said, these are not a bunch of the other drivers and teammates and managers and all these others saying, yes, he's right, this should go, because they know that that is a very small side of the aisle to be on. And you're right. The Bubba Wallace position that he took, the car that he's going to drive this in this upcoming race, he's out there. And the question is, how alone is he? Because it certainly feels like there's not a lot of people on his side. Tyson Fury has weighed in on his upcoming fights, and it's great. You'll hear it next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.
Gentlemen, we're setting records. We got breaking news.
Again? My goodness.
What, again?
Who's following you on Twitter?
No, I don't have any new followers, but it's getting real out here. It's getting real out here in the street. We got breaking news. As you know, a show that's been on for 32 seasons, Cops, has been canceled.
Ooh. Yeah.
After 32 seasons. It's getting real out here.
Yeah. I mean, I don't. Uh-huh. Probably a little bit overdue in retrospect.
Probably.
I honestly didn't know it was still going. I didn't know it was still on.
In full disclosure, I've been looking at this show side-eyed for a minute now. I've been looking at it side-eyed for a little bit now because I'm like, huh, everybody said that you got on this show all the time? They always wrong? Every single time?
Well, like, I would imagine there was some editing going on in some of these episodes. Yeah, no, I mean, that show has been 32 seasons. I mean, this was when I was in college. This was a staple of you would watch it before you'd go out at night. And yeah, that show feels very different all of a sudden. And maybe not all of a sudden. Mm. Maybe that's my problem for not seeing it until more recently. It is my problem, I should say. Yeah, that good decision. Whoever decided to pull the plug on that, good.
Oh man, good branding though, right, guys? I mean, they had us fooled. Yeah, I was like, bad boy. Yeah, chasing down. Yeah, run. And I was like, eventually, I don't know when this was, maybe 10 years ago or something, I heard the song and I was like, wait a minute. All the people were caught? All the people were really legitimately bad? Then why we need to be criminal justice if everybody's innocent?
Right about that.
32
and guys, some updates to some updates to some breaking news that you guys broke earlier. The odds are out for the Fury versus Joshua heavyweight, long anticipated heavyweight bout, and Fury is a favorite by -200.
Mm.
That's
not a crazy heavy favorite. That's
no, not, I mean, it's not crazy.
But it's not crazy. That's not even, obviously, but that's a modest favorite at this point. Tyson Fury is talking already. Here's Tyson Fury talking about his upcoming fights.
Hello there. I'm just after getting off the phone with Daniel Kinahan. He's just informed me that the biggest fight in British boxing history has just been agreed. Get up there, my boy! Big shout out, Dan. He got this done literally over the line. 2-fight deal. Tyson Fury versus Anthony Joshua next year. One problem. I just got to smash Deontay Wilder's face right in the next fight. And then we go into the Joshua fight next year. So there we are. The Gypsy King versus AJ is on for next year, but there's a hurdle in the road called the Bronze Bomber, a.k.a. the Knockout King, and I will get onto him and knock him spark out. And then we got on to the big fight. So big thank you, Dan, for getting this deal over the line. All the best. God bless you all. See you soon. Peace out.
And that's why the world needs Tyson Fury right there, right? That's why he's as compelling of a heavyweight as we've seen in a really long time, because you can tell, the particulars of the fights, I'm sure somebody said, okay, that's him. That's him. He's not doing that performance that we see fighters do when you can tell it's real and you can tell it's an authentic. He is real. He is authentic. And he's somebody that we're going to want to see fight. That right there is what boxing needs, a heavyweight with some game and some personality.
What is it about that accent that just makes everything sound so proper? he starts talking and I'm listening to him and it sounds as if he's putting together like a grocery list of things he needs to do when he runs out.
Well, wait till the press conferences where he and Josh will be talking. Hey, mate, I'm going to beat you up, right, mate? Well, I don't know, mate. I've got to talk proper right, hon. He's going to go back and forth. But he did answer a question for us and we thought there might be walkaway money for Wilder, so there is not. He still has to beat Wash Wilder, which he says he'll bash his face in. So there's still that block, that stepping stone to get over, which could potentially, I don't know, win or lose if it'll mess up the fight. I doubt it because he had a three fight deal between Fury and Wilder, but we still get to see Fury and Joshua no matter what. Just still got to beat Wilder.
That press conference will sound like we're watching C-SPAN and checking out a parliament discussion or something. I don't know exactly how that works over there, but I have a feeling it works probably something like that. Look, like you said, he's got to fight Wilder again. This isn't a perfect comparison, but this is a little bit like the Anthony Davis thing we're talking about. That I just don't like wild cards. I don't like uncertain, because what happens if he gets caught? It's not unprecedented. Doesn't that fight become less interesting if he gets caught?
No. Yes. Listen, Fury is a very good boxer, and he's very entertaining. And this is a money-making business. And whether or not, you know, he takes a, you know, takes an L against Deontay Wilder, I don't think that's really going to impact the curiosity of seeing these two guys. And, you know, Raj and I were talking, you know, offline. You go ahead and you do it back in the UK. And no one in the UK is going to be like, well, you lost to the American. We don't want to see you two fight. No one's going to say that, you know. So it's going to be a great fight. It's going to be interesting. You know, I think Fury is the clear favorite. Raj feels that way. Clearly Vegas feels as if Fury's a favorite. Mm-hmm. You know, Joshua's got some work to do. And I don't necessarily think that what happens with Wilder matters, because he's a domestic, he's American, and by and large, he's a dud in the Q rating category.
That's no, I agree. No, I'm not saying that all of a sudden with Anthony, or I should say Deontay Wilder, all of a sudden we care about him all over again. I'm saying that I hear what you're saying about the UK, LZ, but I'm talking about trying to get people into the tent that maybe under different circumstances would not be boxing people. Well, Tyson Fury has captured their attention to a certain degree. And if he goes and gets beaten before he gets into the ring with Anthony Joshua, I do think that I just saw this guy lose to a guy. I don't know if that helps the next fight. I don't know if that this guy isn't what we thought. He's not the next big thing. He's not quite as good as we thought he is. I'll wait for the next guy. I think that's a possibility. Here,
real quick. Here's why I think you're correct, Travis. If Tyson Fury can get by Wilder, it'll be the first time to have the undisputed heavyweight champion since Lennox Lewis in the year 2000. That's 20 years. So that's why it's a big deal, because if he'll keep all the belts and then Joshua has a belt, we'll have an undisputed heavyweight for the first time in years.
Let's go. Let's get it done. More live sports. The MLS is coming back. They have a restart date. We'll tell you what that is. The one sport that doesn't, though, is still baseball. But Pedro Gomez told us earlier that there could be a last resort. We'll tell you what that is next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
I just got to smash Deontay Wilder's face right in.